So I honestly knew for over a year that after I graduated, I wasn't going to work right away. And I just think the problem, like the hardest thing with that is being able to have to tell people repeatedly, like, you know, I'm this is what I'm doing for the summer, but like, don't get me wrong, I'm still waking up at 7, probably before you are when you're going to work. And I'm still like, you know, going day and night and getting stuff done, running around, like, you know, I'm going to the rink, I still coach figure skating, you know, I teach private lessons, like I'm doing a lot still. So don't get me wrong, my total hours add up as a full-time thing. Obviously not traditional though, but I think that's something that's part of the, what, you know, probably the entrepreneurial journey, I guess.
You're listening to the Figure It Out podcast, produced by FIO Media. Hey everyone, how's it going? This is Jonathan Gerhartz, the founder of FIO Media and the creator of the Figure It Out podcast. I had the opportunity today to talk with Emily Dong. Emily Elizabeth Dong was born and raised in a very small town between Reading and Lancaster, Pennsylvania. From the age of 7, her life consisted of figure skating, and at the age of 10, she picked up competitive tennis as well. Throughout her teenage years, she spent most of her time training in both sports, with a stronger focus in figure skating and committing to a schedule of waking up at 5 a.m. to skate before school. She was a 2-time Keystone State champion in both figure skating and tennis and ranked number 1 in Central Pennsylvania in USTA junior tennis in all divisions. At the age of 18, she packed her bags and moved to Southern California on her own to begin college at UC Irvine before later transferring to Chapman University. During her college career, she discovered her passion for content creation online and writing about self-improvement topics revolving around one's mindset. In addition, she began her business Elite Skatewear at the age of 17 and continues to scale and grow the brand while in school and continues to serve the skating community worldwide. Emily graduated in May 2019 with cum laude honors and a degree in strategic and corporate communication and a minor in entrepreneurship. She plans to continue to focus on scaling her business, her podcast platform, the Young and Ambitious podcast, and pursue professional work in digital marketing or potentially pursue law school in the near future. So Emily and I had a great conversation. It was really easy for me to relate to Emily because being only a year out of college, I can really easily think back to when I first graduated and where I was at that time as an entrepreneur, as someone looking to start up a business. So Emily and I talked a lot about that process, talked a lot about the challenges that a young entrepreneur might face when looking to get started. And I hope you enjoy our conversation. I know I really enjoyed our conversation. And like I said, it was really, really great for me to kind of reflect back on the past year and think about that and put that in perspective to Emily. And hopefully, she learned a little bit from it. I know I learned a lot from it. So with that said, here's the conversation. Really, really hope you guys enjoy it. Take care. Hey, Emily, great to have you on. Thanks so much for joining me. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me as well.
Yeah. You know, I like to connect with entrepreneurs. I find it really interesting. Listening to their story and just talking with them about their experience, I find there's a lot you can learn. I kind of just like talking and connecting and just kind of figuring out how you got started, how you did things. So that's why I brought you on today. We connected over Instagram and I just wanted to learn a little bit more about you and then kind of share that story like with the listeners of my podcast. So again, thanks for joining me. What's been going on with you lately? What are you up to? Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about like what you have going on right now?
Yeah. So again, thanks for having me. Right now I'm in the, what they call the post-grad stage. I just graduated from college in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So I graduated from a pretty small school called Chapman University. It's also in Orange County. And so I'm kind of just taking the summer easy right now, in regards to not really replacing the school hours with anything full-time necessarily, but I'm still doing a lot of course, as an entrepreneur, a lot of my own entrepreneurial projects, a lot of my own work with my own podcast as well. So a lot of that is going on right now in regards to how I'm taking my summer. But other than that, I'm kind of just taking the summer relatively easy, just kind of doing my own projects until probably fall time to see kind of where I'm at and evaluate from there my next move.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great, I think, way to go about your first summer out of college. Mm-hmm. So I'm only a year out. So I graduated just a year ahead of you, but I took a very similar route. I was like, you know, don't want to get a full-time job. I'm really interested in kind of seeing what I can do on my own first, at least testing that out. And I kind of set a date for myself. I guess I did 6 months because that's when my student loans happened to be, the deferment period was over. So I was like, all right, I'll give myself 6 months, see what I can do. And if nothing's going from there, then, you know, maybe I'll get a job or something. But
exactly. And honestly, that's precisely my thought process as well. I think as you probably have felt the same, it's always tough kind of explaining that to people who wonder what's your next step, what you're doing. And, you know, even though a lot of people kind of see the outside of what I'm doing and, you know, having a business and everything, it's still a lot to handle on your own. And at the same time, I'm one to always have wanted to learn and kind of experience the other side. And so I think I definitely don't mind taking on like a full-time job or what they call a real job, especially when explaining it to my parents. But I think, that's like a tough part is being able to have people rationalize that thought process on like what you're doing. And like, but I mean, that's the best part is, yeah, having that personal deadline, which is kind of for me as well, kind of giving it pretty much like end of September, October, mm-hmm. you know. So even though I'm taking it easy right now, it's also a lot of pressure, personal pressure on myself to really see where I'm at by that time.
Sure. So do you have like a set goal, like I need to be making this much a month, or you kind of just want to see how it goes and take it?
Yeah, it honestly does come down to where I am financially come that time, just because as you probably know yourself, it's just, it's not consistent like a normal job. And so some months are going to be definitely double or triple like some other months, and then the other months that you're not getting as much sales or being financially well, it's a little discouraging because then you question, is this a good choice? But then the peak months are also always like, oh, okay, I'm definitely doing this. So I think it's just kind of being able to evaluate and like critically look at where I'm at, how I'm feeling with doing this, is like the right choice and everything for me. But I'm also leaning towards most likely pursuing at least something part-time outside. So maybe like part-time freelance or part-time something that's like kind of more mundane, as like silly as it sounds. I think I obviously have a college degree, can always put it to use and maybe do obviously multiple projects that kind of come into a full-time thing. So
yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense to me when you say you want to do something maybe like more mundane, and it may not make sense to everyone, but I think the like daily like hectic lifestyle of like running a business, and sounds like you're doing multiple things, just like managing that can be so hectic that you almost want to have like a fallback where you're just kind of doing something a little bit more simple at least.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny too, because my major was in communication and business. It was honestly a strong combination of both. Okay. And most students graduate kind of going into digital marketing, kind of social media branding, all that kind of digital content, which of course I do for my personal content as well in my business already. And so I've always said that once or if I do decide to do the real job thing and whatever, I don't think I will see myself going into digital marketing as like my first job, despite having internship experience in it, despite mm-hmm. obviously having majored in something that's really focused or really geared towards that. I think that I want something even as simple, I mean, not simple, but something just different than what I do as an entrepreneur, because I combine digital marketing in my own projects. I combine a lot of that thinking already. And I noticed a lot of burnout when I had an internship while I was in school. doing something the same thing as I was doing with my personal project. So I was like, I'd rather do sales or even something that's a little bit just completely different. So I can say that's what I'm doing as my professional work, and what I'm doing as a, you know, what they say the side hustles are, I'm doing this. And I want to be able to keep that in a different group is kind of how I think of it.
Yeah, sure. I think that's important. I mean, at least for me, I like doing different things, and whether one is just kind of satisfy like one niche and or one is just kind of keep you on more balance. And I think that's definitely important for me. I know some people are like, I love this one thing so much, I want to do it like every day, all day. And that's cool too. But I think it's a cool way of like kind of breaking it up and keeping balance within your own life, is kind of just diversifying type of work you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Cool. So you said you're working on like multiple projects right now. Is that stuff outside of the Elite Skatewear company, or is that all just kind of around that?
Yeah. So my main focus is on growing Elite Skatewear and kind of just branding it in the skating community, which is, you know, obviously very niche. Branding it in a way that kind of brings a different, I guess, taste to the skating community when it comes to dresses and the apparel, because the skating community is a little bit more traditional. Like a lot of dressmakers are like the type of people that make dresses for other skaters, and I'm kind of branding it in a more of like a modern millennial oriented to like Generation Z skaters who are like on Instagram nowadays, and they see a lot of the brand. So that is a core focus of mine right now. But I'm also working on my podcast, which I have with a creative partner. Her name is Sienna Mirabella. She, her main platform is YouTube, but we work together on this podcast that we launched, I think, in mid-April. So it's just been a couple months now. But that has been taking off really well. And public speaking and that kind of scope of work has also been something I've always been great at, something I've always wanted to do as well. And so I'm trying to utilize that platform and kind of, I guess, kind of pivot a little bit with the podcast and kind of be able to partner more with brands, partner more with kind of the topics her and I talk about and focus on that podcast. So that's kind of like a project we're working on, which I call it a project, but I mean, it's something that's going to be ongoing for a long time. And so I think that's why I want to see like the speed of how quick it can scale and you know, where we go outside of podcasts as a brand.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a project. It's definitely something separate. I mean, I do this podcast more of just kind of like marketing for my company than anything. Mm-hmm. But I also really enjoy doing it. And I also can see the potential for this be like something completely separate at one day. You know, I don't know that I right now have the time or like the really desire to do that, but it's definitely could be a full blown project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So maybe talk a little bit more about your business, because I find it to be pretty interesting. You were a childhood athlete, a pretty phenomenal one, if I'm not mistaken. And how did that experience kind of mold you to want to create a business around your sport? And maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, you were mentioning that there's a more of a traditional approach to the way these dresses are designed. So maybe you could just dive a little bit more into those, like, into those norms of like skating and kind of how you're kind of changed that.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for a comment about the athlete thing, but sure. Yeah, I did grow up competing in figure skating since the age of 6 or 7. So it's been a long time. And I'd say when I started, I was around 16 or 17. And to kind of preface that, before I designed my own dresses or, you know, kind of created the foundation of it, my mom was the one who kind of had the back end and built the foundation for the business and kind of the skating dresses, because she was the one that initially outsourced and found someone to make my dresses, because the cost of skating the sport alone is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And then the dresses that are on the market, typically worn by the skaters I was competing against, you know, were at least $500. Wow. And just to kind of give like a little bit of background, like a skating lesson on average, like for 30 minutes at my level was probably like $55. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. close to 60 for a 30-minute lesson.
Wow.
So obviously a very costly sport, very, very, very costly sport. It's honestly, I think from what I heard, it's like a year for someone who's close to like a Team USA level, it's like 60, 70,000 a year. Yeah. So it's insane. But I remember at the time my mom didn't really want to invest that much in a dress for me, which I don't blame her because it's so expensive. And at the same time, I would wear it just probably 5 times that season or maybe 6.
Wow. Right.
I mean, especially at that level, I was competing like a couple of times a year because that's pretty normal. You know, have to retrain your program and everything. And I'd get out there and wear that same dress for 5 or 6 times. And I don't think, and some dresses are even 1,000. And that was just something that my mom wasn't willing to do, which I understand fairly. Mm-hmm. So she kind of was like, okay, how can I, you know, get Emily to, or find someone to make these dresses and more affordable and cheaper. And so she outsourced it and then kind of built a business herself out of it. And then when I was 16 and 17, I realized, well, I've always had an entrepreneurial type of personality. I've always been like a little bit rebellious, did it my own way. Didn't really always like follow the rules necessarily because not because I was trying to be a rebel, but more because I felt like it could be done either in a more efficient way or just a more strategic way. And so I picked up the business and said, oh, you know, I'm starting to not only have a more keen eye for my own designs and my own dresses and how it aligns with my music, but I just had a better vision on how I wanted like a business to be, and like especially with skating dresses. So when I was 16, I created my own, designed my own, and then started an eBay store. So that's kind of where I started. And then I went to college, 18, 19, and at that time I was like a freshman and sophomore. So I will be honest, I didn't really have that much of a focus on the business at the time. Yeah. I kind of had the eBay store up, but really just when the sales came, it came, and I really didn't do much to really like put work and effort into it until junior year. And so that's when I really like sat down during the summer, built a website, really created this vision on like the colors, the brand, what people would think of when they saw like the logo Elite Skatewear, or like just the font and everything. And so I really invested a lot of time in just creating kind of like a Lululemon Nike type brand in the skating community, just because everyone else, as a majority, are dressmakers. They're not really like this brand that is like, oh, I got from Nike. You know, it's usually like, oh, you know, like Joanna Stevens made this dress. I don't know. It's just like a random name versus saying Elite Skatewear. I bought this dress from Elite Skatewear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. So kind of bring more of like the athletic perspective to it.
Yeah. And a community perspective, I would say. Because something I do with Elite Skatewear as well is we have like an email newsletter, which is still inconsistent, but the vision with that is to be able to provide more value to the consumers outside of just a dress. Sure. Because I think that's something, obviously, from all my own research, just learning of how to brand any business is to be able to provide, you know, extensive value outside of the physical product. And I think I can see how to add value, especially obviously coming from, you know, Olympic training from under Olympic level coaches. I have also had, you know, the ability to see, you know, how to fix the jump, I coach figure skating as well. So I think we also provide like small quirks, like motivational tips, like on our Instagram and like on our Instagram stories and things that help make skaters and parents who are online kind of feel a part of like some sort of skating community, because it's very competitive in the sport. And I think people tend to, you know, not really connect with each other in the sport. And I think I wanted to kind of merge the two.
Yeah. That's super cool. And just kind of using that podcast maybe, or using your brand as like a platform to do that, sounds like a really, really great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's super interesting when you have a business owner like yourself who's lived and like done what you're trying to do already, right? So you were a figure skater your whole life. You have a good understanding of like, other than it being expensive, like, oh, maybe like there's some functional reasons why like these dresses by designers like aren't great, or like, you know, oh, you know, we need a community in the sport, and how can I kind of provide that? So because that's coming from someone like yourself who spent so much time around the sport, I feel like you have a really nice angle to be able to like attack those problems.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's a huge advantage for me too. From my understanding, I'd say maybe only like 50% of other like dressmakers or other, you know, so-called competitors in the market were also figure skaters, I feel like, or at least involved in the sport in another way. And I come from it from like a coach angle. I come from it from a, you know, recent college graduate. I come from it as like a very recent competitive figure skater as well. So I understand, especially when it comes to the way the 15-year-old thinks and also the parent thinks, because I've dealt with my own parents and how they think when it comes to how much they're willing to spend. And then also, you know, the skaters who are 15, who are also starting to make their own decisions, what they're going to think when they come across an Instagram, a brand, and like something trendy, like how they feel towards it and how they're going to beg their parents to be like, hey, I want to get my dress from, you know, Elite Skatewear.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. That's an awesome perspective. And so are your dresses, how much cheaper is your dress compared to like a regular like designer dress that you'd have to buy?
Yeah, so the main difference is that our dresses, like a standard dress, is just we don't use Swarovski crystals unless it's requested. And that's something I believe a lot of other dressmakers do, is that their automatic standard dress comes with Swarovski crystals, which is a big part of what makes it really expensive, obviously. So like their standard dress might start at like $400, $450. And my standard dress starts at usually like 200.
Okay.
So the main cut in the cost is like the crystals, but then at their request, if they wanted Swarovski, like that's easily like doable. And obviously our price point kind of jumps up to that. But yeah, and at the same time too, I think a big one is that a lot of dressmakers typically offer a lot of like custom, like full custom, where it's like designed for like that one person, and it's usually not repeated as much. Like, and so those are obviously kind of like a wedding dress when it's like specifically for and then that's like crazy expensive. And so, you know, for a lot of parents who are not, who want to do that, but also don't want to spend $1,000 on a dress for their 15-year-old skater, they're probably, you know, they're going to look at something more realistic that is still obviously very like high quality, which is something that a lot of skaters and parents have commented on, is like just like the quality of the fabric, the way it's like sewn and everything. So that's something I know is like a huge difference for us.
Okay, excellent. Great. So how's it going so far? What, since your junior year when you made those and like started to design the brand and everything, like what has happened since then?
Yeah, I would say a big impact is being able to partner with like wholesale partners and have it in retail pretty much.
Okay.
And with skating dresses, obviously it's not going to be in like Nordstrom or anything, but it's in what in the skating community we call a pro shop, which is usually, if you ever go to an ice rink, they usually have some sort of pro shop where they sell like the hockey gear or like those guards that they put on the skates or the blades or, you know, gloves, whatever. There's usually like this little shop that, you know, even they have like skate sharpeners in there, for example. So in Southern California, it's actually, I want to say the top like area where a lot of skaters train, if not Colorado. So there's a large market in Southern California. So I'm able to, I've recently partnered with a business partner who has the dresses in two of her stores, which are probably like the largest ones in Southern California. So people from LA are driving there, people from San Diego are making the drive there just because it's very prominent. And so a lot of our dresses are there. And that has also kind of given us free PR and free marketing, because even if they're not able to buy that direct dress because maybe it doesn't fit the skater, they're able to look at the hang tag and be like, oh, where is this dress from? And kind of be able to see in person like what the dress looks like, how the dress feels and everything. And that obviously builds more trust with the end customer.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you see the company has kind of grown over the past couple of years? Or?
It's definitely grown. And like I said, it's because I'm trying to position it as a kind of like a Nike type brand. I'm partnering and putting it into stores, which is a big one that no other realistic competitor is really doing. They're kind of doing it mainly just from, you know, their personal sales, their website, or, you know, from word of mouth, which again is like kind of like that low-key traditional route. And I'm kind of, yeah, sacrificing margin on doing wholesale, but at the same time being strategic with where I put it, building it as, again, like a brand, not just like, oh, it's this dressmaker. And so seeing it in stores has allowed people to, you know, just know like the name more. And then, you know, when they come across the Instagram, because we do a lot of engagement, or at least try to engaging with like the skating community, skaters, parents, and everything, it starts to resonate with them. They're like, oh, I've seen this before, or I've heard this before. And I think growing our social media platforms as well has been able to position it as that kind of front runner, I guess, like in the market.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Sounds like it's going really well. Sounds like you have definitely a good plan for growing it. I like the Nike idea. I read, I don't know if you've read Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. You ever read that one?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, Phil Knight's the founder of Nike. He wrote a book called Shoe Dog. This is like an autobiography about his story. And he is very adamant that like going into stores, I mean, I guess he didn't have the internet, you know, when he was growing the company in like the 60s and 70s. But that was a big part of his success, was people getting in the store, like feeling the shoes, trying them on, because they were a very different shoe. He cared so much about, you know, the functionality of the shoe compared to other companies, previous companies where, you know, running shoes, they didn't really care that much. There wasn't like so much technology and time spent on it. And he thought that was so foundational for Nike, was having those stores, having people getting to feel it and really get exposed to the brand. You know, that was a really big thing that made him successful.
Yeah. And I think that's a big one that it's funny, because like, I think like my mom and I kind of disagreed on that, where she kind of felt like, you know, it's not like financially, it's not like worth like the profit on like putting into the stores is not that much, which is true. But I think sometimes you just have to do what your competitors aren't doing and kind of be able to like jump out there first and kind of get the brand known more. Because I think when I was trying to reshape the brand my junior year and really kind of create something outside of just like that eBay store I started when I was 16, I think I was like, you know, like I needed to be first recognized more. And so I think I've been partners with like these two stores, and I have a few others in like Florida, Colorado, Texas as well, and Delaware. So I mean, again, it's like they, like the bulk orders are obviously not that big, because dresses are just so expensive. But I mean, it's still there, where I mean, there's so many skaters who are like 12 years old and their parents are like, we don't want to order something custom. Maybe we can find something that like fits you. We just want like a blue color, and sometimes they can find one of ours. Or like I said, like, you know, they can look at the hang tag and be like, oh, we can visit their website and just order. So I think it's given so much like free publicity, free marketing, as well as bring consumers to recognize that like such like the quality of the dresses, you know, how it's made, how it's like, how it feels. Even if they try it on and don't end up buying it, they're like, you know, wow, it's like so well made. And I think that's really hard to tell just by looking at a photo.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Excellent. So it sounds like your mom she's still pretty involved in the business. Is that true?
Not really. I think maybe before I shifted like junior year, she was. I think at the time she was kind of like doing some of the shipments for me whenever I had an order. Like it was kind of just going back to like her pretty much. I'd like send her that order and she'd kind of like do all like, you know, the back end for me. But now it's honestly like 99% me. I get like 1% of her kind of, you know, in terms of anything like supplier related. Sometimes she has to like step in, cause she built that relationship 10 years ago with, the original suppliers. But other than that, the whole like packing, branding, website building, like every single thing has still only been me. And, very, very, very recently, I'm talking like last week was the when I decided I would hire, an intern to do the social media. Just because I'm on social media way too much for myself and branding, and I'm just, you know, burnt out from it. And I think at this point, I think I can, you know, delegate and explain a vision and kind of have someone else help execute that when it's just on social media, especially. So I think that's something that I'm trying to delegate more so I can focus on being able to do what I like in the business more, which is kind of the business, the numbers aspect.
Sure. Yeah. I'm the same way. I mean, I run a social media, business, a digital marketing business. And I do enjoy it. I do enjoy the rush of kind of growing somebody up, especially, when you get a good client who's super passionate about what they do. That's what I really like, helping those people. But I do also, really enjoy the business side. I enjoy the rush of growing myself and creating new creative solutions to problems. That's kind of probably my best thing. So I've had the opportunity to bring on like 3 kind of intern/employees this summer. And that's been super awesome just to have them kind of get certain processes like on autopilot. And that I can really focus on like, okay, here's this new problem. Like, how can I come up with a really creative solution, build the next thing? But it just so helps to have like my social media posts, like kind of being gone out on their own. You know, my sister's actually, she just graduated same time you did, and she's kind of been taking some of that over, and it's nice. And it's also, I find it super rewarding too. And I'm sure maybe, I don't know if you've had this already in the week, but I'm sure you'll realize it. I find it super rewarding to be like a people manager. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of skill required. And that I've developed over, the past couple of years by just being, managing a bunch of different projects. And that's definitely a huge skill. It's huge, something that, I needed to learn, is how do I manage 10 different things at once, manage different clients. And I, that's one thing, but then it's a whole nother animal to be like, okay, how do I manage and motivate, 3 people and make them enjoy coming to the office every day, enjoy showing up and doing the things they want to do, and then producing, good results. Like, that's a whole nother thing, but I've really found it rewarding to kind of take on that challenge and learn from them and learn more about myself, kind of just going through the process.
Yeah. And no, it's funny because I couldn't agree more with feeling really fulfilled in kind of being that people manager in a sense, or having to manage others and delegate and kind of try to build that team to help execute that vision. Because I think I've always been a visionary. I've always been able to really explain what I see as a great outcome. And I think I've also learned along the ways, especially in college too, because I was president of a club that was pretty prominent on campus. And I think at the time I took it on when it was like still brand new on campus, because it was like a wellness club for like females, and it was almost like a whole sorority rush of girls that were like, oh my God, like, what is this? This is like so trendy pretty much. And I found like a common theme that I was able to do is always make something really feel like stir curiosity in a lot of people. And I think being in that president position has and especially having an exec team that was still kind of the type of people that needed to be managed, I learned from that as well, how fulfilling it was to kind of, lead them and kind of explain to them what needs to be done to get X, Y, and Z accomplished. And then I feel the same way in, my recent conversations with my new intern. It's like, hey, this is kind of like the plan. What do you want to see out of it? What do you want to get out of it? And I think that's something I've always been really great at, is just working with people and like kind of being the leader in that within like a group, a small group. And I see, even like I said before, even if I went into, or when I do probably go into some sort of real job, I find myself more suited for a kind of people position, whether it has anything to do with public speaking or just being in a managerial type role to kind of overlook something. I see that as a very strong suit of mine, or strong skill. And so that's why I kind of want to do something separate from what I do in this whole entrepreneurial world and journey.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, being an entrepreneur is pretty lonely, right? I mean, you said it's mostly 99% on you. Having a small team around definitely helps with that, just getting some people just to hang out with, if nothing more, but then also to like bounce some ideas off of, is super helpful. And then that would make sense too, why you would kind of want to go outside of that again, right? Because it's a lonely kind of like everything falls on you. So to kind of go into a different role where you're with more people interacting, working as a team more is probably fulfill yeah, that.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you said too about like, you always ask like, you know, your intern or someone that you're leading, like, what do you want to get out of this? Because I found that to be super important. So I had an intern last year too, and I definitely wasn't as good at kind of managing her and leading her as I was like this year with these guys. I find I'm having a lot more success, and I guess just learning a little bit, developing, you know, a whole another year, and then also just trial and error. But I found that's been really helpful for me. It's just kind of asking them. And I did this right at the beginning too. I was like, what do you guys want out of this? I know you're only here for, you know, a couple of months. And you know, to be honest, you know, any intern, you know, they are going to be able to get some stuff done, and they've done a great job. They've gotten some things done for me. Like I said, put some things on autopilot, and it's been awesome. But you know, mostly it's for them. It's for what do they get out of this experience? Yeah. They're coming out of school, trying something out that they're going to be, you know, they're going to be working for, you know, whoever, 40 odd years after this, right? So they should have a good opportunity to try something out and really see if this is what they might want to do. So I wanted to make sure that they were able to really get something out of this experience. And I think focusing on that has created better outcomes for me too, because when I'm like, hey, listen, like, what do you want to do? And they're like, well, I really like doing this. And then I'm like, okay, let me go back, think about a way that you can use that skill and, you know, those things to help me. And there's a merger of those two, you know, where they're doing something they like, it's something that's helpful for me, is when the best outcome is produced, because, you know, everybody's working for something. They're really owning what they're doing. And, you know, so I think it's not only great for them to develop, but that's probably the best way for me that I found to get the productivity and the product and product that I'm looking for, is to make sure that they're exploring their needs and their desires.
Exactly. And honestly, I think that's kind of a mistake that a lot of the older generation who are in managerial positions don't look at when they're working with people of like the millennial generation and the future Gen Z, is like being able to relate to them and being able to really understand and get insight. Because I think when you go on the day to day, it can really just be mundane and you kind of ignore that human connection and that human relation aspect. And I think a lot of people, especially when they're going to work under you or work for you to help execute a vision, they love to be understood and they need to be understood. And when they feel important, that like you who's managing them still really sees eye to eye as a human, I think that really helps them want to put in better effort. Whereas when someone is just like, you know, manager versus associate, and they're like, you know, do X, Y, and Z, the other person who's working under is kind of just like, I'm here just, you know, either to like just make money then, or just to get the job done. And I think that's a common mistake a lot of people do, is that they don't really invest time in understanding, I guess, human psychology a little bit on how people work. I'm honestly really invested in like the Myers-Briggs personality test. I take that pretty seriously, because I've learned just over the years in college, just understanding even my own friends, their personality types, and people that I've, you know, worked with. I just think that understanding, you know, if they're a thinker, a feeler, or whatever, has really allowed me to communicate to them in the voice they need it to be.
Yeah, yeah, that's super important. Just having an understanding of the people you're working with and the way that they communicate, definitely. And I think too, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people talk about millennials and the generation as a whole, and you know, I think one of the issues with that is that not everyone is the stereotype, right? I mean, that's generally just kind of a bad way to go about talking about a group of people. It's like, oh, they're all like this, right? But I think also there is some truth to it. There is some, I would say that our generation or the millennial generation, they do maybe, I don't know if it's a sense of entitlement, but I think they do want to do things that they're passionate about. They do want to have a purpose. And I think, you know, the older generation does look at that and say, well, listen, when I came out of work, you know, they threw me down a ditch with a shovel and were like, get to work. And I didn't get to have a sense of purpose. So they feel that we should have to have that same kind of, you know, experience where we have to work our way up until we get to do something that we're purposeful about. And I definitely, I agree with that to a sense. I think everybody should have to pay their dues a bit. I think everybody should have to work their way up in certain circumstances. But I also have seen a lot of people that I've graduated with, a lot of people, peers and stuff, doing some amazing things like yourself, kind of just taking an alternate route, not getting a job right out of college, taking a second to say, well, maybe I can figure something out on my own. You know, maybe I can do something different than the norm. And I find that to be super powerful. I find that to be super inspiring, that there's a big mass of people questioning the status quo, questioning the way things are done. Is that problematic in a sense? Potentially. I think maybe some people should fall in line at some point and like show up on time and do the things right. But I also find it super inspiring at the same time.
Yeah, likewise. I agree with that as well. And I think that's funny, kind of going back to something I was always, as a kid, is I questioned that status quo.
Yeah,
I questioned, and I think it's funny, it's, you can usually, if you analyze and kind of almost like audit your life in a way, and you look back and you think like, how was I when I was 10, 5, 15? And I think a common theme there has always been like, I wanted to do it myself. You know, there was just so many things like, you know, I always was with a, what they call like the popular group in high school, but then I always did things also like my own way. And I remember so many people wondering like, why are you doing that? That's not what your friend group is doing. And I'm like, and I was always just like, why do I need to do what my friend group is doing? And I think so many people, just fall into that, I guess, passive zone where they're like, I'll do what I'm told, or I'll do what people say I should do. And I think, like you said, some people do need to fall in line. But I think, you know, something I've always practiced is like, even throughout college, especially senior year, I woke up like 7 a.m. every day, and I didn't like need to. I didn't even have class at 8. Even on the days I did have class, it was maybe like 12. You know, I woke up as if like, I think you have to like put in the practice first. And I think something like I always did was just kind of go outside the status quo. I was like, yeah, maybe I wasn't out till 2 a.m. drinking because I wanted to wake up at 7, maybe like get a workout in and, you know, get my day going. And I think that's something that you have to be able to recognize if you're willing to do, or if you have the discipline to do that, in order to kind of put yourself in the position of, you know, what everyone loves now is like the passionate entrepreneur and people doing, you know, being a self-starter. And I think it's great. And I think the hard part for me, and maybe for you and other entrepreneurs as well, is just being able to, like I said, like kind of rationalize that thought process with other people who are really like, you got to get a job, you got to do this. And yeah. I agree with it. I think it's really important to get that experience. And that's why I'm definitely not hesitating to go that route. I think the question is, do I put like the 40 hours in there and then have to hold everything else back? You know what I mean? I mean, obviously I can work till 1 a.m. like when I get home from work and like do my own thing, definitely doable. But is it more strategic to maybe get a part-time job that's like 25 hours a week and do what I do now and make that like my living? I think that's something that should be more commonly maybe thought of, accepted more, because I think even that has put some people, you know, I mean, family members, I think they're like, okay, that's more realistic. But I think it just puts people on edge when they're like, you're not doing what, like, we sent you to college, like, or like, you went to college, you got a degree, and like, you're doing this. And like, it's funny. It's funny to see how some people don't really think for themselves and really evaluate the type of person they are and where they can apply their skills.
Yeah. I mean, it's challenging. I mean, when I graduated, definitely had a lot of pressure from the parents, from the family. And I think, you know, some people will tell you, silence it all out. Don't listen to anybody. Do what you want to do. And it's all well and good. But, you know, grandparents, parents, they've been around for a little longer than we have. They probably have some good ideas around what we should do.
Right.
They do have our best interests in mind at the end of the day, whether or not we agree with it. So I think, you know, you do want to hear them out, hear what they have to say. I think that's good stuff. But, you know, you do to a sense, you know, if if you, this is what you truly want to do. And I think it's important. You got to have a lot of self-awareness around, like, is this what I want to do? Right. And if it is, then you do have to tune it out to a bit and say, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try it out. And, you know, I think, you know, 5 years from now, if you're super happy and it did work out because you did what you wanted to do, like, they're not going to care that you didn't listen to them, you know, five years before that. And I just think that, again, just taking the time to just think about the alternate route, think about, you know, is this what I want to do before just jumping in is super important. And you have all the time in the world to get a job, to do whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
So it's not a big deal to just take 6 months, take a year, just think about it. And, you know, I can relate and speak from an insane perspective on this, because this was literally me a year ago in your exact shoes, you know, arguing with my parents about how am I going to pay my student loans? It's telling my grandpa that I wasn't going to get a job. Like, yeah, it's weird and challenging. But I couldn't be more happy that I stuck with it. To be where I'm at today, and not that I've done everything I want to do, but I do feel like better. I have grown in a year. I have, you know, made a little bit of money. I have some interns now, and that's super rewarding to be here as opposed to where I was a year ago. And if I did just go and get a job, I don't know that I would have done that. So
right,
it's tough, but if you can keep it going, keep moving forward, I think you got the right idea.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that too is being able to have the discipline to keep going with it.
Sure.
I think especially, you know, for those who listen, if they're in college, I think it's huge to start thinking about it like junior and senior year.
Yeah.
It's like almost, you know, like instead of waiting until post-grad to think about it, start thinking about it senior, which is actually what I did. So I honestly knew for over a year that after I graduated, I wasn't going to work right away. And I just think the problem, like the hardest thing with that is being able to have to tell people repeatedly, like, you know, I'm this is what I'm doing for the summer, but like, don't get me wrong, I'm still waking up at 7, probably before you are when you're going to work. And I'm still like, you know, going day and night and getting stuff done, running around, like, you know, I'm going to the rink, I still coach figure skating, you know, I teach private lessons, like I'm doing a lot still. So don't get me wrong, my total hours add up as a full-time thing. Obviously not traditional though, but I think that's something that's part of the, what, you know, probably the entrepreneurial journey, I guess. It's just kind of defying the odds, really having to be told a lot of negative things and having to kind of push through that on the other side and really be like, not let that drown you. Cause I think it's really easy to let it get to your head and be like, maybe I should just finally listen. And sometimes like some things just spike up, but it's funny too, because I don't know if you read this in or like my bio, but I also was I've recently started considering if I really wanted to like kind of change routes, I would consider law school as well. I think that was my initial passion going into undergrad, going into college. I was like, okay, what's like this pre-law track? And then I realized you technically don't need to. There's no pre-law major. It's like can major in anything, you just have to get X, Y, Z and a billion things done and apply to law school. So I think that's something that I've been considering as well and kind of keeping in the back of my mind. And so I'm at a point where I just take LSAT questions for fun at night, like an hour a night. I just do practice questions. Nice. And people are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you know, even if I don't go to law school, I think this is fun. And they're like, you're freaking weird. And I was I mean, it's true. I think they're like, who the heck does LSAT questions for fun? But I'm always just trying to expand my knowledge and be able to kind of dip my toes in other aspects that I've always either been passionate about, fulfilled in, or really great at. And so that's the hard part too. I feel like as an entrepreneur, you're usually pretty good at a few things. And so that's why you kind of, you know, do all of it, because you're like, I'm really good at it. It's just kind of what kind of comes down to is like, what does the best?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's tough. I think for me, I still do this, but I do also remember when I first started like having to explain to people, I sit at home all day on my computer, like, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt, sometimes in my bed, and just like create digital marketing campaigns for people. And they're like, what? Like, and you do like, so you get that like stereotype that people might be like, oh, well, you know, I guess you'll find that job one day, right? And I'm like, no, not really. Like, this is like what I'm going to do. So it feels weird, definitely. But I think for me, you know, that was a part of it, but it was also like internally, like me think like, what was my image of myself? And that for a while it was like, oh wow, I kind of just feel like a bum. I kind of just feel like, you know, an underachiever. I'm not really doing anything. So it was critical for me to kind of like, A, do some things like you were talking about, like you're doing those LSAT questions. For me, I picked up doing some like coding. So I've, you know, been learning Python for, you know, I don't know, maybe like 8 or 9 months now. So for me, that helped me feel more fulfilled and helped me feel like I was, you know, living, working a little bit harder. But then also too, it was just like, believing in myself and believing in like what I was doing was a lot. And like you were saying, I was doing a ton of hours. I was, you know, working all day long. And it was just like kind of proving to myself and telling myself over and over again, like, this is real work. Just because you're not leaving the house, or, you know, doesn't mean you're not working. And coming to terms with that. And once I did, and I still struggle with it, I still have bad weeks, but, you know, I can at least say, and like, wow, you know what? Like, I have been doing this, you know, this is what I want to do. I do enjoy it. So why not do it? You know, and it just took a while to kind of really come to terms with that idea and convince myself of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I'd say I'm kind of a little bit in that same space as well, because I think sometimes I feel like, because I'm not doing something that is really like fully approved and understood by many people, and like especially family members who are just always like worried about you and worried for your future, you know, I feel slightly like not achieved, you know, like I didn't like achieve anything yet, because, you know, you didn't get that job. And I feel like, you know, when numbers can come up, like, you know, in future years, that's when they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, you're fine now, right? But I think it's always that the worry from the people who like care about you, or people who are wanting to see you actually do something real with your life. I think that's like that hard obstacle to get through, especially like in the first couple months after and moving forward.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging, but you know, patience too, you know, it does take time, and just I guess, you know, perseverance, being able to like push through it. I mean, there's just so many like low points that I can look back on in the last year. And I mean, I applied to a couple of jobs. I was actually in a couple of final round interviews and like was this close to being like full-time working. And it's just funny the way it worked out, how I didn't get any of those positions where I was like so convinced that I was going to get the job. And so many times where I would take 2 weeks and like barely do anything. Like I would do my client work and, but like nothing else. And I was like, this is it. Like I'm probably going to be done. And I don't know, just finding a way to like push through those times, because they definitely did happen. And the family criticism doesn't make it any easier. But
And I think it's like the thing with that too, is just like having to put in so many hours to get to that other side of being able to really, really do that and do what you do like full time, and like make what you know what fulfills you like your full time job, versus, you know, most people who are kind of complacent and work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and take their weekends off. Whereas in my position, I barely take any of the days off. And even if on a day it's like laid back, I'm still doing work for at least like 4 to 5 hours. And then kind of, you know, especially at this age, I just feel like, you know, recently being a recent graduate, it's just, this is an advantage point, being really fresh, having a lot of energy, and being able to pivot in any direction. So that's why I don't mind putting myself in that little LSAT world of like kind of prepping a little bit, just to see in the case if I ever really was like, you know, I really want to go this route, I'm already like 20% in, you know, I think a lot of people just don't do that. And I think that's a huge advantage too, is got to put yourself 20% in, even if you end up not going there, at least you gain knowledge, you know, you lost just a little bit of time, but I mean, you know, that's just part of life.
Yeah. Kind of just like having a backup plan or kind of prepping. Right. Yeah. That's definitely a good idea. I think too, something that's helped me recently. So when I first started too, was like, I can't take a weekend, a single weekend. Like, I don't want a single day off. And I did that for a while, and it just wasn't working out. Like, I had a hard time staying, like, fresh, staying, not getting burned out. So I think, you know, fairly recently, I've been applying more patience. I've been applying, like, more, not of a laid back attitude by any means, but I've been shutting it off, you know, time to time more. And that has really, really helped me. You know, like, I'm 23. Like, if my end goal is I want to be a CEO of, you know, a multi-million dollar company, I don't need to do that at age 24 or 5. Like, I can do that at age 30. I can do that at age 50. Like, right. I have plenty of time to get there. Doesn't mean that I shouldn't be working hard now and kind of setting up checkpoints as to how I can get there. And making sure that my day-to-day is preparing me. Like, you're saying, like, you're doing LSAT questions at night. That's preparing you for one day, maybe go to law school. Like, I am doing the things that are preparing me now. But, like, if my friends, like, want to go down the shore for, like, the weekend and I go, it's not the end of the world because I'm 23. Yeah. I got, like, 7 more years if by 30 I want to do it. I got 17 if by 40 I want to do it. So yeah. It's okay, you know, like – Yeah. And I did not think that way a year ago. A year ago, I was like, nope, not doing anything, not spending money, like staying right. inside, working. And I wasn't happy doing it.
You get burned out by that. And I think someone that kind of preaches the other way is, I feel like Gary Vaynerchuk, I think that he kind of preaches, and I love some of the stuff he says, but the one thing he's always said, like, is you should be sleeping or, like, you know, living in an apartment with, like, 6 other people and, like, basically paying the lowest rent possible and, like, mm-hmm. you know, eating dirt for a couple of years. And to an extent, yeah, but I mean, it's not like, I feel like he's the type of person I'd be like, no, you shouldn't be going to, like, the shore with your friends for the weekend, you know? Yeah.
But so he is actually where I got this advice, actually. So I think his main thing is look, like, a lot of you people are talking shit about, like, why I'm not growing, like, why I'm not doing this. And he's like, I guarantee that you're not, like, eating dirt. I guarantee you're not working as hard as you could be. You could be doing this. You could be doing that. But at the same time, like, self-awareness, like, what do I want to do? Like, what is my actual goal? Like, if it is, like, I want to be a million-dollar CEO by age 23 or 25, then shit, I better not be taking weekends off and complaining about why I'm not growing because – like, no way I'm getting there without doing those things. But I think he's also says at the same time, like, listen, like, if you are 23 and, like, are an entrepreneur and, like, want to be a millionaire, like, you don't have to do it tomorrow. Like, you can do it at, like, age 30, age 40 and, like, you know, and still be, like, and his thing is, too, is, like, he's 43, right? And he's, like, I still feel so young. It's like, you have no idea how young I still feel. So it's, like, if you do not achieve this until you're 43, like, you still got, like, half your life to live, like, you know, so it's, I think that's where I got that kind of advice, and it took me a while to, like, really, because he does talk a lot about the other end, right, of being, like, you know, going, like, you know, as hard as you possibly can and putting all the hours in. I guess it took me a while to really understand what his real message was really just, like, being aware of, like, what you want and, like, where you want to be tomorrow, where you want to be in 10 years, and how you're going to get there. And, you know, not that you have to work 20 hours a day every day at age 23. You know, you're 23, like, I still got a lot of friends that like to go and hang out, go to the beach, and, you know, so I find it, you know, okay to do those things now. Maybe, you know, maybe, and I've been thinking about this lately, like, you know what, maybe age 26, I'm going to shut it down. I'm going to really live more minimally. I'm going to not go out as much and crank it up to 80 hours a week. You know, I put a lot of hours in now, but maybe then is when I'll really crank it up. But, you know, at least for now, like, I'm going to take a day off here and there. I'm going to go hang out on the weekends, go for a hike or whatever, because I want to do those things at age 23. I do. I find it just important to kind of have that self-awareness.
Definitely. And I try to take time to like, I mean, I'm very into, like, you know, fitness and wellness just because of the background I came from. And I think, I take a lot of time, for myself to, like, go on hikes. I do, like, a workout every day. I do, like, things to, like, kind of break the hours in between, kind of be able to get, like, a creative flow going still. I think, all that is super important. I think there's definitely other people that I've talked to that are like, you know, like, you know, you can't be like traveling right now. Like, you can't be doing anything. Like, you know, but I mean, at the same time, like, yeah, there's sometimes you can't, but at the same time, I also just graduated 2 months ago. I think I'm going to like travel just a little bit while I still can. Cause I think later on, like as the gap starts to get bigger from the time I graduated, I think that's when, yeah, I should be a little bit more less lenient and more picky, like with my weekends and everything and stuff like that. But I agree, you know, being at this age, I think is such a prime time, you know, just graduating and like, and being able to spend time with the friends and, you know, kind of do the things that, like, you know, 20 some year olds do is like go out and live a little.
Yeah. I think it's important. And, you know, I don't think we have the rest of our lives to do all those things, like, you know, traveling and
I agree, especially traveling.
Yeah, traveling's tough, I think, as you get older. So, I mean, look, I think if at age 40, like, your passion was like, I want to go travel, or even 50, and like, you just really wanted to do it, you could like pick up and do it. But, you know, you might be married, you might have a couple kids, you might have a mortgage payment, like, it's probably gonna be harder. So,
yeah, and I had the self like epiphany just a couple of weeks ago too. I was back home in PA and visiting DC area and Philly and everything, and I realized like this is also the time to kind of explore different cities to live in, because it's kind of like either now until, you know, I'm like settled down and whatever the heck, and then, or like after 60 pretty much, you know. I mean because when you have the kids and you have like the whole, it's a different life spectrum, and I listen to a lot of people that are in that right now or that have been in that, and I just know that it's definitely, it's not like you can make that independent decision anymore. It's like contingent on other people and like, you know, kids or like, you know, like a spouse, like it just depends on other people. And I think right now is like the great time to be able to make those decisions without having it be contingent or like affect other people directly.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And just to kind of like lower risk, right? I mean,
yeah.
Don't have a lot of like overhead at age 23, you know, you know, God forbid whole thing came crashing down right now. I really wouldn't lose a ton, right? Other than just kind of time and a lot of effort put in. And of course it would be a heartbreak, but I'd get over it. And then again, I'd have the rest of my life to pick up the pieces and move forward. So plenty of time. And I think it's too a good time to just try a bunch of things. Like it seems like you're doing that. I know I've done that. Right. But again, because you have the time to do it, because you have like the freedom to make the decision, you're not tied down by a spouse or, you know, a kid or, you know, a close relationship or even a job you've been at for 5 to 10 years. You know, it's you have the ability to kind of go and try something. If it fails, move on, go do something else. So,
yeah. And then I think that's kind of where I'm at too, is like the best part about having a business is like, you know, working remote. And kind of being able to, I mean, I just recently, you know, I think I'm like leaning towards like moving back to the East Coast for a couple years.
Yeah.
So either DC or maybe New York, if I was really, really like thought about it. But that's honestly, New York City was always where I originally wanted to live, you know, in my 20s. And I think I pursued California first to go to college here. Then, you know, now I'm here, I've been here for 4 years and I'm like, you know, like, where do I see myself? And I see myself here in my late 20s, but I was like, do I see myself just hanging around here for another, you know, throughout my entire 20s? And I was like, I honestly don't think so. I think I see myself more kind of in my roots on the East Coast, and then, you know, kind of do what I need to do over there for, you know, a couple years, and then, you know, kind of move from there. Cause I think I don't want to be too complacent, because I think things are kind of not complacent, but I think it's just like things I know a lot of SoCal now, you know. It's kind of, I've been to LA, I've been to San Diego, lived in OC, like I've seen it all, and it's just it's great. It's definitely a really great life for people who are building families out here as well. I think being younger though, I'm like, I think I could thrive more in a real like big city, and I think I've always wanted that experience. So I think that's something kind of along the same themes, just kind of going out and doing something different.
Yeah, sure. No, definitely. Now's the time, right? Try something new.
Why exactly. Not?
All right. Well, awesome. I think been close to an hour. These things always fly by and never really realize where the time goes, but
yeah,
it's been great talking to you. I think you got a great perspective on kind of like how to go about the future, whether or not you go to law school or you move to the East Coast, you stick with this business or not, you know, I think, you know, just because of the way you're going about it, I think you're going to end up doing something that you like. You're going to be successful kind of regardless. And it's cool. It's really cool to kind of connect with someone like yourself. I've been connecting with a lot of more experienced entrepreneurs, people who have been doing this a long time. And that's always super valuable, right? I mean, they have a lot to say. They've been through more, but it's also really cool connecting someone like yourself who's kind of just starting, where we can kind of share what that experience is like, only being a couple months out, only being, for me, a year out. Yeah. You know, that's a valuable experience that people can learn from. And I like documenting it. I like sharing it. I like connecting with people like yourself because, you know, I really agreed with like a lot of things. I can really relate to like a lot of what you're going through. So it's just awesome to connect with you, and wishing you the best of luck moving forward. And, you know, let me be a resource for you, you know, anything you need, because like I said, it seems like we've shared a lot of the same experiences and can kind of really, I think, help each other kind of get through it. So.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I couldn't agree more. I always like connecting with like-minded individuals, those who have really like been through the journey, kind of really understand that, that discipline. And so, yeah, I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Before you go, anything that you have coming up, you want to share, your website or social media, anything like that?
Yeah. So I'm pretty much just on Instagram. I try to keep it pretty simple. So my personal Instagram is at Emily E. Duong, D-U-O-N-G. My business is just at Elite Skatewear on Instagram. I also have a blog. It's just called emilyelizabeth.blog. And then my podcast is called The Young and Ambitious Podcast. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, great. Thanks so much for sharing, Emily. Again, thanks for coming on. I'll be sure to kind of drop those links in the description so everybody can find you. But yeah, awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care.